welcome to The Middle. Conversations at the intersection of public relations, journalism, and marketing, where we talk about what's happening behind the scenes to tell and sell stories to audiences in North America and around the world. I'm your host, Sophie Natto, the National Media Lead at Edelman Canada. So, let's get that conversation started.
Roll tape. Take ready, camera three, one center up.
Good evening, I'm David Walker.
And I'm Lois Hart. Now here's the news.
In the summer of 1980, CNN went to air and forever changed the architecture of the news cycle. All of a sudden, news was about now, and we were talking about it all day long. Then came along Twitter in the spring of 2006. In the 12 years since, the social media platform has become the favorite tool of reporters and news junkies alike. It has also transformed the way we consume, share, and break news. Mastering the art of communicating on Twitter is proving difficult for many in media, PR, and in business. On today's episode, the challenge of news at the speed of Twitter, navigating the veracity of the channel while avoiding risk. I'm joined by two folks who spend way more time on Twitter than you do and still manage to stay sane. Cam Gordon is the head of communications for Twitter Canada, a job he's held for 3.5 years. It's his job to explain and defend the platform. El-Amin Abdel-Mahmoud is a news curation and social media editor for BuzzFeed. He's a regular feature on CBC panels of all kinds and tends to a Twitter following of over 17,000 people. So welcome to you both. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
No problem. So first of all, let's just get at the real crux of the matter. Why on earth are you on Twitter, El-Amin?
I don't think I have an option at this point. Listen, I've been a journalist for 6.5 years or so. And everything that is interesting, the things that we write about, originate on Twitter. And then we write about them and then they go back on Twitter and people talk about them. It's a virtuous cycle. And Twitter keeps us in business, I think, as much as we keep Twitter in business, mm-hmm. Which is to say that Twitter is the main platform, at least in 2018, of where we discuss the most modern and interesting conversation.
Cam.
I have to be on it because I work for the company. But as we're mentioning just before we started recording, 10 years to the day, I actually joined Twitter. So at the time, I spent 12 years working for PR agencies before. So someone who's worked in PR a long time. Sophie, I'm sure you can appreciate this. I mean, it's just invaluable just seeing what media are talking about, good, yeah. Bad, or otherwise. The flow, and I'm always surprised by the stuff that gets popular on Twitter, and also the stuff that seems like a big deal to me that doesn't go on Twitter too, and we'll just, yeah. Kind of like die in the vine too, and try as I might to be a seasoned, kind of in tune PR practitioner, I'm surprised every day, and I work for the company, about what's popping and what's not on Twitter. And it's fascinating. I mean, it's a fascinating cultural study, and to Elamine's point, I mean, it really does dictate a lot of stuff in the news cycle. It's amazing how much stuff in the news is actually reactions to stuff rather than actual stuff happening. And more that seems to be a thing every year.
Yeah. And so is that good or bad? Let's talk about the modern news cycle. It used to be a 24-hour cycle, and I find clients are asking me now, well, what is it now? Like, when do you post stories? What's the best time? And I think that the news cycle has maybe changed existentially with Twitter. So how would you, describe the news cycle with Twitter?
I would describe it as suffering. I think primarily, but yeah. No, I listen.
Punishing, the whole time.
Well, okay. So one thing that's interesting to me is that for a period of time, Facebook, am I allowed to say Facebook near you? Would you melt? Is that?
I've got like a taser in my pocket. On the third try, okay. Make a little zap. All right. Go right ahead.
Just the second time.
Yeah.
Right.
There was a period of time where Facebook made a serious play for the news, which is to say it made a serious play for being the place that hosts where people share news, and how people talk about news. That, by and large, seems to have disappeared, right? Facebook has retreated from that space, being like, not interested, not our thing, thank you. A mantle that Twitter has been very happy to pick up. And so what's interesting to me about the way that Twitter has evolved is that it seems to have made an active play for being the place where people have the public conversation at the moment. What that does to the news cycle is make it they, you know, they're interdependent. They're interdependent on one another. And especially with a president who does set the news cycle anew every single time that he tweets. I think this is, I feel like we've maybe reached peak Twitter. Like, it can't possibly get more relevant than this moment.
And you mean the president of Edelman? Right?
Just checking. No.
Oh.
I'm Seth the Moore. Think further
the
south.
The guy with the, yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. The guy we will not name, I guess, yes. On this episode.
Yeah.
Is he driving the news cycle? I mean, really, I have clients wondering if it's every 15 minutes, you know, they have like seconds to respond, for instance, if something bad happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly lanes that he's driving. I mean, the fascinating thing about Twitter, as you guys know, that some people use it as a two-way conversation platform, but for a lot of people, and a lot of verified accounts, I mean, I think journalists are their own thing, but, you know, for politicians or sports team, I would say it's like bite-sized press releases, really. If you're a politician or your sports team, you know, your Toronto Blue Jays, you're announcing some guy got traded or called up. In that way, it's very one-directional, and then it's all the conversation around that. Again, it's a reaction, but it's also like the dialogue, which, you know, can be constructive, but can be challenging. I mean, it's certainly challenging for us, and, you know, most journalists have a certain level.
Right.
You know, they've seen it firsthand about, you know, what can happen when people start reacting to stuff that they might not like. And, you know, you see it all on Twitter, obviously. And, you know, it's one of the things we're obviously looking at a lot these days.
Yeah, it doesn't leave a lot of room for context and depth. Right. And I think that even when you expanded the character count, whatever, last year, still not enough, right, to get the details that I think people need to understand what's happening in the world.
I wonder if that's a culture thing as opposed to a platform thing. Which is to say, I'm not going to lay all the blame on you, Cam.
Okay. Thank you.
Kind of
you. Yeah. But there's something about the way that the conversation on Twitter has sort of developed, where everyone's just like desperate to respond to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trending topics tend to beget trending topics. I mean, I assume that's what the data begets, you know? Yeah. To me, that's interesting, but at the same time, it's a vicious sort of outcome that... If we're talking about that one-way traffic and you send something out into the world, the risk that you bear in terms of it coming back at you is really, really high.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, you know, more and more people are conscious of. And I mean, like, believe me, we're very conscious of it as well. I mean, you know, if you guys saw Jack Dorsey, some of the interviews he did recently, he talked about, you know, do we have to rethink Twitter in a way where we put more of the focus on topics as opposed to specific tweets? And, you know, a lot of the stuff we've done in terms of, you know, inserting different types of things into your timeline, you know, tweets that someone you follow might have liked, things like this. This is a way of surfacing different points of view and different voices. Yes, it's still, you know, ultimately dictated by who you follow. But more and more, we try to suggest things that we think would complement what's already in your timeline as well, just to get a very different look. I mean, we all have accounts that we see on our timelines all the time that we don't follow. Yes. We just know that, you know, one or two layers removed from the people we do follow, these people are a big deal, or these accounts are a big deal. And it's also like reactions to stuff too. Like, you know, we all see, you know, I don't know if everyone in the room follows Donald Trump. We all see his tweets in our timeline or in news cycles, and we see the reaction to that, whether you follow these people or not.
I don't follow him.
I have unfollowed Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to, right? World will be like, hey, he said something interesting, mm-hmm. or that you need to know when he does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because I don't need to go firsthand.
I'm really worried about, you know, I mean, essentially this podcast, just the three of us sitting here, is media Twitter. 100%.
It is me.
And I know. And in fact, in thinking of the middle and starting this podcast, I essentially went on Twitter and I went, oh, who's talking about this stuff? And I DM'd people and I was like, hey, you want to do some? And this is what we're living. Is that representative, though, of what's necessary to protect and drive democracy, right? Like, we're living in the perfect echo chamber. So to your point, though, Cam, about, you know, about veracity of information, I mean, can we even actually ever get there? Or are we just going to stay comfortable where we are?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the things when I work with media, because I think maybe at a time there was a temptation where I would explain, you know, why would you use Twitter data in a news story? You know, there's a debate. What are the top topics being discussed? You know, we did this a lot in the Ontario election. You know, Doug Ford got more mentioned than the Kathleen Wynne, whatever. I'm very careful in how we present that, and as well I should be, because, you know, this is not a representation of everyone in Toronto. This is a representation of what the people of Twitter are saying about a certain topic.
Yes.
So, I mean, when you talk about like being surprised by what we're seeing on Twitter, during that debate, we were actually monitoring it real time to see what topics were like really popping. I thought it was going to be like sex ed because it's just sort of salacious and, you know, people are kind of joking about some of the terminology. that was being used when that came up. But it was actually the stuff about the hydro salaries very specifically just really spiked. And myself and my colleague at the time, Jen Holly, we were backstage to see news looking at this, and we're like, I knew this was a hot topic, but this seemed, I thought this was, we were sort of done talking about hydro, on to, you know, sex ed and stuff, but the hydro thing still really, really popped too. So, I mean, you know, again, like, we work for the company, we feel like we have a pretty good handle on it, mm-hmm. but the people of Twitter, you know, they're going to dictate what the big topics are. And, you know, try as we might to think we have a good handle on this, we might not always. And it's always fascinating to observe, because there's a million examples just like that.
Yeah, no, Alameen, I was going to ask you, though, we've all seen it. If a group of people decides to push a hashtag and sure. tweet all at the same time, they can drive those trending topics pretty significantly. Yes. So, Alameen, what would your assessment be of that specific example?
Well, two things. One, I think much of the media industry have a bias towards Twitter, because we're on it and we're talking to each other all the time on it. And we tend to sort of forget that, for you know, that the rest of the world is not, or the rest of the world is not necessarily talking about the same kind of issues. Jerry Butts, special advisor to the Prime Minister, I think his Twitter bio for the longest time, I'm not sure if it still is or not, but it was something like, Twitter is for journalists and Facebook is for your mom. And like, that's a decent reminder that, like, all the fuss that we might make, if you exist in that echo chamber, you're not really escaping, and you're not really necessarily hearing what everyone in the world is listening to. And the other thing is that we ran a pretty good story, I think like a couple of months ago, about this guy who termed himself, you know, the fake news king of Mexico. And what he does for a living is he makes stuff trend, whether on Twitter or on Facebook. He's got his little Victory Lab, is the name of the place. I can't remember the details of it, but politicians pay him a bunch of money, and then he makes certain, you know, trending topics trend. So the voice of the people is quite bendable, you know. It's quite prone to misrepresentation, to hijacking even. And that's something that I'm really conscious of, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jack kind of said in recent interviews that he's ready to look at that existentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think a lot of it is, you know, the framing in the media. And sometimes the conversation on Twitter does mirror what we see, you know, in reality. And again, going back to the Ontario election, I think that was actually accurate. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Kathleen Wynne had a lot of vitriol on Twitter, you know, in recent months. And then, you know, at the polls, that was reflected, like, big time as well in the ascendance of Doug Ford. And I mean, it's fascinating, especially with Paul. I don't want to make this like an entire political discussion, but it's interesting with someone like Doug Ford, how there's a real consistency with how his team uses Twitter, with how he's positioned at like a podium, or how he's positioned at a public event, in terms of like, he's very one directional, like the stuff he puts out, like it's very polished. Like, I don't know firsthand, does he do all his own tweeting? Who knows?
I assume not.
Yeah, quite likely. I mean, at very least, he has a lot of help with it, if not entirely. Mm. But, you know, that's reflective of how his team positions him and when he's at events. And, you know, you see stuff like this stuff with all the clapping and you know, even sort of the access or lack of access he's giving journalists. You know, that's sort of reflected in how he manages Twitter and you know, I would imagine, like his other social channels.
Let's talk about, rather than talk about the pros, let's talk about regular humans on Twitter and how terrifying it can be if you screw it up. There's no mercy, right? I don't understand, Alameen, how you've been tweeting for so long without, you know, getting dragged into a Twitter mob, for instance, by this point, right? I have clients who, you know, are terrified. They won't, because they've seen how quickly somebody can be, you know, dragged under a Twitter mob. So talk to me a little bit about that, Alameen. Like, first of all, how are you not more scared, frankly?
I mean, be aware that you are on a public platform. I think like that's like that should be an obvious rule. But then the next step is like, once you have that awareness, is like, don't say dumb things.
Well, define dumb though, Alameen.
Things that you can't back up, things that are clearly not true, things that are, that you are saying without full knowledge of the situation. Now, these are human mistakes and everyone makes them to various degrees. The other part of it is like, learn to be a human being on those platforms, which is to say, like, apologize and be like, I didn't have the full facts. If you didn't have the full facts, that happens to everybody.
Although I've seen people attempt apologies on Twitter and it still didn't work.
What are we talking about?
Well, just general. In general, I think in Canada specifically, they're very much. We've talked about this
offline. Examples,
or are we no, just gonna, left yeah. and right Twitter. Like sure. there are groups of folks like John Kay and Barbara Kay, and like a bunch of people on the right, and then you'll see people like Saatchi and a bunch of people on the left. And there seems to be it's almost like a show now where they just sort of fight with each other all the time. And I've spoken to a couple of people on both sides. It just you know it's dangerous. You misstep in one of those places, and you could find yourself in trouble.
Totally. But at the same time, part of regulating your behavior on that platform is knowing what you feel comfortable backing up and not backing up.
Right.
Unlike John Kay's lost followers. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. of course he's lost followers. Everyone has over something that they've tweeted. I don't think we've seen something so large, or that's not true. We've definitely seen large instances of a major fuck up. Can I say fuck up on this
it's
podcast?
It's a podcast, and I'm going to say yes.
I think Brad Ross swears.
He did. So yeah. Brad set the tone. So you just use all the words, yes. Alameen. Go ahead.
But you know, the thing that comes to mind was the cultural appropriation prize. Mm. This is for you, Josh. The thing that comes to mind is the cultural appropriation prize mm-hmm. sort of conversation that happened, because that was just a bunch of people who were just getting themselves riled up, and then they tweeted a bunch of things that they maybe shouldn't have. And the apologies that were tendered, I thought were reasonable for the circumstance. Now, I can't say what the consequences for those in real life would have been. I think that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I find that if you're sincerely apologizing, most people will lay off. A few people will continue to be mad. I think that's like any platform.
Cam, I mean, you've worked PR before you were in Twitter. So you've worked with clients like I have who yeah. Undoubtedly have screwed up at a certain point or not. So what is your best advice? If you, to Alameen's point, if you fuck up on Twitter, what should you do next? What's your best advice?
I think at this point, it's really just own it. And own it in, you know, clear, uncertain terms. I made a mistake. Here's what I'm doing. And just move on, really. I mean, you know, as much as you want to try to finesse it or PR it or, you know,
which
issue.
You shouldn't.
Yeah, like I think, you know, I think of something that I think at the time got a lot of credit for how transparent they were with the Listeria with
Maple Leaf Foods.
Maple Leaf's Foods,
who is a
yeah.
client, full disclosure, but
okay,
yeah.
there you go. Shout out to Chicken Leaf. Franks or whatever. Yeah.
keep talking though.
Sure,
they did
not?
A good job. Tell us how.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, that they were just very clear, completely accountable, made zero excuse for what happened. It's, you know, this happened. It shouldn't have happened. Here's what we're doing. We want to learn from this and we want to be better. And you hear this sort of language from our CEO, Jack Dorsey, who want to do better. We've done this. We think, you know, we're improving, we're learning things, but there's still a lot to do. And it's honestly, it's one of the things I love working for a company like Twitter. You know, I can even come and like have these discussions. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here with Alameen and like our, you know, our relationship with BuzzFeed, you know, we're their media partner. We have AM to DM, but you know, you work with Saatchi, like, yeah. And you guys, I mean, all the stuff you guys have said, like, has been very fair. And, you know, you guys are, you invest in your reporting, and we see that. And we also know that you guys clearly love Twitter. Like, I always think of a lot of the media, their frustration is Twitter. It's almost, you know, your kids, like, really frustrate you.
It's like a complicated marriage. We really, really like it. And then at various junctures, really need to time out. Like, I just need to put my phone away
and
stop looking
exactly.
at it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when we do something that people don't like, it's frustrating because people, I do think, genuinely want to see us succeed.
I think
I really
that's true.
That's true. Yeah,
just because I think we are, like, a huge public good. And then, you know, when we do have a misstep, which we've had, you know, we've had missteps over the years, like, no doubt. That's why it's frustrating. It's frustrating for people because also, like, especially journalists and, you know, media companies and partners of ours, they invest in us too. They invest their time. In some cases, they invest their money. You know, working for PR agencies, we certainly invested our hours doing stuff on Twitter. And then when you see stuff take a turn, it's like, hey, you know, we put a lot of time into this and we're not, you know, we're sort of not seeing it in return in terms of what you guys are doing to, you know, make this, you know, better place for everyone.
So the flip side of risk is virality. And it's funny. So a lot of folks will ask me, Alameen, you know, how do you do it? Alameen will put up tweets that they just have a life of their own, occasionally end up in the New York Times. Well, there was that tweet during the royal wedding. It was a thing.
Yeah, it was
a thing. It was a thing.
It was a moment.
And it even surprised you, as I recall.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think, and people want to know how to catch lightning in a bottle, which I think is impossible, frankly. And I'm hoping you can explain, Alamine, how you can sort of unpack your own virality. Does that make sense?
I would love to.
Can you?
You can't catch lightning in a bottle. No, I mean, listen, I think there are certain moments that you can be ready for.
Talk about
once,
that.
Once they happen. Sure. So like one of my popular tweets. No.
we'll make sure you don't get
I
too
sound
obnoxious here.
Infuriating. Yeah. I think I've had a few tweets that kind of went way more popular than I thought they would. But I also kind of anticipated that those might be the popular tweets if it ever happened. So one of them, for example, was this, you know, complaint about who won the best picture, when best actor Oscar. And it was just like a silly tweet. I can't remember who won, but it was like a picture of them versus Daniel Kaluuya of Get Out, who should have won best actor. And I just tweeted that. And with the caption, you know, popular vote versus electoral college. And it connected with people and people thought it was funny. Now, that's something that's been tried before, you know, like that, the same sort of frame of a joke has happened before. Mm-hmm. So like, this was like an obvious, like, people will probably retweet this because it's funny-ish and it's topical and it's of the moment. The New York Times story they're talking about. So like that was a tweet about the royal wedding. And it was really just a tweet about how I was surprised to see, a black preacher that many people sort of remarked upon his performance at the wedding, and then the black gospel choir, and then the cellist. And I was like, you know, this is like really interesting to me because this is not what I thought I was waking up for. That tweet had no good reason to go viral. It did. And I think it's because it was just like a nice, earnest moment in the middle of like an event that everyone was watching. And so mm-hmm. a bunch of people retweeted it and then a bunch more people retweeted it. Mm-hmm. But I find that Twitter sort of like the sentiments that go the most viral are of two kind of extremes. Like it's like either the most snarky or the most earnest and like not a lot in the middle. Like you got to mm-hmm. lean into one of those sides.
Or sometimes the cutest.
Yeah,
it's like a kitten or something. Like
that's really. 100%.
Puppies travel.
If you could
well.
Do all three, you've really
a cute really snarky tweet. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, yeah. Cam, do you have any good examples of like? I mean, can anybody replicate this magic that Alamine occasionally has?
Yeah. Well, like I think of two of my, you know, probably not as great as Alamine. So you have a great Twitter handle too, Alamine88.
Yeah. How did you land on that? Is that your?
I assume you're born in 88.
I was born in
88. You were born in 88.
Yeah. Although I've had white supremacists tweet at me and be like, "Hey, are you like?" Because 88 is like a number in white supremacy sort of like, I don't know, thought. Wow. Because H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. And so 88 is Heil Hitler.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just said Heil Hitler on this podcast.
No, it's not.
But so anyway, like a bunch of people are like, hey, are you associated? I'm like, clearly not. Anyway.
well, it's kind of sporty too. I think of like Eric Lindros, who was number 88. Not, you know, someone could, you know, on a lighter.
It's not sporty or white supremacy.
Consequences,
just
right?
Born in 88.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thank you. Okay. You were saying I have a great Twitter handle.
Cute,
yeah.
Cute. We need puppies to be viral. Is that what you were
saying?
Well,
I think of two examples. One thing, here's one that I tweeted that I was very proud of and did well. This was, I don't know if either, for some reason to keep it in hockey. There was this guy, Tony, I don't know if you're either of you hockey fans. There was this guy, Tony X, who was this black guy in St. Louis, had never watched hockey before.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? And he was talking about, he was watching the St. Louis Blues were in the playoffs, and I don't think he'd ever watch hockey. And it's sort of like, black guy in the Midwest learns about hockey. And he had all these tweets, and it was like, awesome. Like, it was really, really funny.
So then the Blues invited him.
That's right, yeah. And he was actually at the NHL Awards and all this, but I actually did a little graph that I made of just showing his Twitter followers and how they were, like, going up. And, you know, he was one of the most mentioned hockey personalities of that round in the playoffs. So that, because it had like a cool little gif in it,
yes,
I said I could see this being popular, and I think he retweeted it, which is part of the reason. Right. I had this other tweet that was one of my most retweeted tweets ever. It was just like a really kind of, I was gonna say the F word, the played out
meanwhile, well, we're all on the record, yeah, now having sworn, so
yeah,
your turn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I never swear on the internet, so
there's a good rule.
Don't damage the
we
brand.
We totally broke that rule. Yeah,
there you go.
Now.
Well, that's a Cam Gordon rule.
I swear on the internet all the time.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, yeah. Why not?
So anyway, I had this other tweet. It was just like sort of the cursory meanwhile in Canada. You know, something we've seen a million times. It was retweeting like a 680 News article about some guy in BC, something about a Bigfoot. It was just sort of like a silly Bigfoot thing. That thing got retweeted like 600 times, and I Don't know why.
First of all, the internet loves Bigfoot.
they do, yeah.
Okay, guys. So let's take all of this magic here and see if we can't give folks in business and in leadership some examples. Because, of course, you know, I'll often get the question. I'm sure you have, Kim, as well. Maybe you have too, Alameen. You know, CEOs, people who are in leadership roles, politicians and or business folks who want to play on Twitter, but really like don't exactly understand how they're supposed to do that. You guys are doing it naturally. You know, a lot of people come to it naturally. If you don't come to Twitter naturally, what should the game plan be?
Well, the first thing is you need to figure out what you're doing on Twitter. A lot of companies want to be on Twitter and they have no reason to be on Twitter. And second of all, like if you are a small insurance claims company, don't tweet. There's no reason for you. I mean, like not to diss small insurance claims, you know, companies. But I just wonder about a lot of companies are like, well, lots of people are on that thing and I should be on that thing. It's like, maybe you shouldn't. And I've had that conversation with people before. And then the next thing is to figure out who your people are, which is to say, who are the people talking about the things that you're interested in? You know, if you are interested in, I don't know, oil, there are a few journalists that you should probably follow and a few organizations that you should follow. Mm-hmm. They will set the conversation that you should be a part of. If you don't have anything valuable, don't just yell it out. Don't just yell something into the middle of that conversation. I think it takes what people underestimate, I think, about Twitter is that it takes a while to build authority. I think that's a thing that doesn't come naturally for everyone. And just because you have a verified account right away doesn't mm-hmm. mean that whatever you say holds any sort of weight. So yeah, it takes a minute.
Okay, cool. Cam, what do you
think? Yeah, I'll definitely echo a lot of the things Alameen said. And I mean, something that might surprise you guys a bit is, you know, we've had people who said, you know, I want to get on Twitter. What should I do? And we'll talk about them. You know, what are you looking to do? And we'll say, you know, maybe now's not the time for you to open up an account. Because, you know, as someone who came from a PR agency, and Sophie, you can probably appreciate this, there's really, it's not a good look if you're a reputable brand and you've got this really stale, I'll just say an online presence. That can be an out-of-date website, or maybe at like a WordPress blog originally if you're a startup and it's still languishing out there, or you know, whatever it is, or a Twitter account that you had some social media manager for a couple months and then they left the company and you lost the password and it's just sort of languishing mm-hmm. out there in the online void. So I always use the analogy with like travel. You know, say you were going to, I don't know, like Spain. It's like, I'm going to go to Spain. It's going to be awesome. Well, okay, but you need to do your research. What parts of Spain are going to be really engaging for you? Which mm-hmm. part of Spain maybe you should say? I feel like I'm going to slag Spain here for some reason. We do have one of my PR colleagues from Twitter is in Spain. So,
right.
Yeah. So, you know, do your research. Figure out what parts. I mean, to Alameen's point, you know, find out who are the voices, whether that's journalists or organizations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, think, you know, do I need some sort of slightly different viewpoints, or you know, if there's a certain topic you're interested, are there voices from other parts of the world mm-hmm. That might add some language? Honestly, it's one of the challenges we have with the platform. We talked about a little off the top, you know, not everyone's on Twitter. When we do market research, it's one of the challenges we have that some people just don't want to put in the effort of finding their tribe on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I would argue everyone on the planet is interested in something.
Yeah.
And you know, it just takes a little effort. You can find other people who are interested and perhaps learn something or at least get some entertainment out of it or have something to do while you're watching The Bachelor or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Not everybody can be Wendy's out of the gate.
Yeah. But I mean, we're
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But like, also, you should recognize, my only advice on this topic is if you're not funny, don't try to be funny. Like, I'm legitimately not funny and I have never tried. Only, I think certain people can be on the Twitter, you know? There's a, right?
I'm hilarious. You I have are. No idea. No, stop it. No, I
no, you're not. You're not funny you. At all. Not yeah. Wendy's funny. You're like, you're funny for
well,
Canada.
Well, I can't be funny with burgers. That's true.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. So, yeah. I mean, I guess know your lane.
I think know your lane, and I think also find some role models, but don't just try to copy it. I mean, I think Wendy's is a great example to bring up because similar to how a couple of years ago, there was a lot of ad agencies, I remember they were saying, I want my WestJet moment. Do you guys remember this WestJet
also
commercial?
Also a client, an amazing client.
There you
they
go.
Are.
This is it's like you gave me a list
Thank
or
you.
Something.
Wow, good job.
But, you know, I think what we're seeing now is a new generation of companies that want to have these, you know, kind of pointed, funny, sharp Twitter presences and social media presences more broadly. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, I would argue those are often very specific to one or two people behind those accounts. And if you're trying to replicate something that specific, maybe it'll work. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you really got to make sure you have the personnel to really pull off something like that. Because it seems like what Wendy's is doing is easy, and I don't think it's easy. What they're doing, it's like a very specific why that, you know, it's a time and place thing with them.
And you can't do that if you're like Manulife. You know what I mean? Like that's not going to work. Yeah.
So, okay, we've completely run out of time.
Manulife a client?
No comment. So listen, so we're just about to run out of time. So with like the last minute or two of the show, I'm hoping you guys can tell me, what's the one thing you'd like to undo from your time on Twitter? Have you ever done anything online that you're like, damn it, I shouldn't have done that, so we can learn from your mistakes?
I know for me, I used to promote stuff like this on Twitter. I'm one of those guys, and I think I was not born in 88 like Elamine, and I was born in the late 70s. So maybe I'm like you, Sophie, mm-hmm. where I had every iteration of, you know, campus radio, school newspapers, GeoCities blogs.
I did those things
too. All those, okay. Well, you were like six when you were doing them.
He's just a prodigy. Yeah. He's not.
But I have at least two or three blogs. I think there's one about baseball and a couple of music blogs that are just sort of out there in the ether.
You have your own podcast, right?
I have my own podcast. Yeah, like that one I'm okay with. But it's sort of that stuff that's a different time and place. There's nothing salacious on it. It's mainly like nerdy data stuff about baseball, but you know, my Twitter account's probably in there, and just the fact I don't know where it is, and I probably lost the password. And GeoCities, I think one of these was a GeoCities website, which is now not even in business, but I still see little bits and pieces once in a while.
Are you saying you wish you were in greater control of your digital assets?
I think that's fair. Yeah, a little bit, but you know, you probably look at my early days of Twitter, and you know, there's little bits of kind of promo. So it's just the stuff sitting out there where I don't necessarily know where it links. And my rule of thumb is just never say anything mean on the internet.
Yeah.
Like point blank.
Yeah.
Especially as someone working in PR. Like it's sort of, to me, at least in my industry, like it seems like a bit of a fool's game if you're working in PR. But, you know, you talk about Brad Ross. Like he said all sorts of point stuff and it works for him because
that's his personal brand. But at the core, he's also a very, very kind person, right? And I've rarely ever seen him come at somebody hardcore. So
yeah, not in an unreasonable way, for sure.
Elamine, would you go back in time to change anything you've ever done?
I mean, are we just going to ignore the fact that Cam didn't give a specific example?
I know, I'm noticing. It's fine.
That was my PR answer.
We're almost at the end of the show anyway.
Oh my God, what?
It's fine.
Nothing? Yeah, what were those URLs?
Nothing they made you like facepalm in retrospect?
Well, let him off the hook. It's fine. It's all good.
Well,
it's
actually, it's pictures that other people have taken of me, like at parties.
Oh, but you can just tell them
stuff.
To take it down.
And I have done that.
Cam, that's not an answer. That's not an answer.
Okay, Elamine, you give us your best mistake then.
Sure.
So
my mistake, my best mistake is not funny at all. Which is that so right after CBC fired Gian Gomeshi.
Yeah.
I think I quote retweeted their tweet announcing this. And it was like this like long, you know, paragraph about me being like upset about this. And I was like, what? I don't understand, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't know. Mm. No one knew. It was sort of like in like that 24-hour period before any information had come out, before the Toronto Star published their story.
Yeah.
Got a gentle DM from a few people being like, you might want to rethink that tweet. Mm. Here's some of the context that is behind that. To this day, I've never done that since. I've never, in the immediate wake of a story, been like, "Oh, I feel like I can comfortably tweet my feelings," because that was a teachable moment of being like, "Wow,
yeah.
No, I did not get that one right." Mm-hmm. So that's my specific fuck up, Cam.
So I think maybe the lesson here is always think before you tweet,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe imagine it on the front page of a newspaper. Just to be extra careful.
I think asking yourself what's the worst thing that could happen here and then work backwards.
Yes.
That's a good rule of thumb.
Exactly right.
That's a good, I like it.
There you go.
All right. So let's leave it there. I'm sure we'll just keep talking on Twitter at some point after this podcast, but thank you very much for all the great advice.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you.
If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can find all of us on Twitter. Cam is at cam_Gordon. Elamine is at Elamine88. And I'm at Sophie Natto.